Diverse authorities have speculated. Why is it that the common mass of people so adore the rotten, the awful, the trite? In a remote laboratory, two genuine warlocks, Ben R. Williams and Greg Morrison, will look popular taste dead in the eye and hold a scalpel to its bloated gullet. They will read America's most popular books. They will ridicule the New York Times bestseller list. They will destroy their reputations and follow a terrible book even into a rotting grave. This, good people, is cannon fodder.
I'm not a man, I'm a destroyer. I'm not a man, I'm a destroyer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ben R. Williams.
And I'm Greg Morrison.
And this is, episode 5.
Yeah.
Cannon fodder.
It is.
So, tonight we will be discussing The Secret.
Secret.
By Rhonda Byrne.
Yeah.
But first, what you been reading lately, Greg?
Well, I've actually been reading up a storm, Ben. I read the first compendium of the Walking Dead comic book series. I read Blood Meridian.
Finally.
Yeah. by Cormac McCarthy. I read a discouragingly academic study of T.S. Eliot, which just cheesed me off. I read The Book of Laughter and Forgetting by Milan Kundera. Finished that today, actually, in a parking lot.
Nice.
And right now, I am reading The Conquest of America by Zvetan Todorov.
Of course, Todorov, yeah.
Okay. he's a French literary critic, and it's all about kind of the nature of communication between, like, Columbus and Cortez, and then, you know, the Arawaks, the Caribs, and Montezuma and the Tlaxcaltecans and people like that. So it's pretty interesting. There are times it gets a little too caught up in, like, what the Western mind is and what the non-Western mind is. But it's pretty perceptive and some good bits. But what about you? What have you been dipping into of late?
I haven't had a whole lot of reading time lately, unfortunately, as evidenced by the fact that I finished this book about 5 minutes ago before we began recording this podcast, this incredibly brief book. I did finish up, finally finished up, That Is All by John Hodgman.
Oh, yeah.
And thoroughly enjoyed that. It's the third book in his Areas of My Expertise trilogy, right. Almanacs of Fake Trivia. I think I'd been subconsciously holding off on finishing it because I did not want the series to come to an end.
Right.
I hope that even though he has said that it's just going to be three books, that, you know, the lure of some shekels in his pocket doesn't deter him from doing another.
Yeah.
Because they're really good. Really
yeah.
Good. This one, probably my least favorite of the three, but I still very much enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been reading that and The Secret, pretty much.
Well, I mean, since you have just so recently completed it, I guess, what were your expectations going into this awful thing?
Well, all I knew going into this book was that, number one, Oprah was pretty big about it. She liked it. So, of course, it sold 100 billion copies.
Yeah, had the Mark of the Beast on it.
Yeah. And my understanding of it was that the principle behind the book was that if you asked the universe for stuff, it would somehow give it to you. And I had thought, of course, going in, well, that's a very simplistic and reductive sort of thing, that surely that's not the premise of
right,
the book.
Right.
What were your expectations going in, Greg?
You know, I actually hadn't heard of this book at all until you told me about it.
Oh.
I was completely unfamiliar with it, and it was, I think, one of the first books that we ever talked about doing.
Yes.
Was The Secret, because it struck, I think, both of us when I had found out about it. It's kind of the ideal cannon fodder book.
Yes.
The sort of the emblematic Emperor's New Clothes kind of book.
Yeah, it's shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Ben, that I gotta say, man. Well, first of all, we should talk a little bit about the physical appearance of the book. When I picked up this book, It is designed to look kind of like a photoshopped page from Da Vinci's journals. Mm-hmm. So it's got all this, oh, arcane script, and oh, very old drawings and ink pen. And the secret is like a wax seal. So, you know, you're breaking the seals on the secret. You're getting down to the real truth, the stuff that the man's been keeping from you all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I gotta say, Ben, I, Greg Morrison, of Sound Body and Mind, declare that The Secret by Rhonda Byrne is the worst fucking book I have ever read. I didn't just dislike this book. Mm-hmm. I didn't just hate this book. I detested this book.
Yeah. I can understand that. And, you know, of course, you read the book before I even cracked it open and completed it. And I was excited for this episode because you were so livid on the phone. It's like, all right, I've been reading that son of a bitch. Oh, my God.
Well, part of the reason why I steamrolled through so much literature this week is because I could only read maybe 30 to 50 pages of this book at a time.
Mm.
Which, I mean, I know that sounds like a lot, but it's not.
No.
I mean, this book is a tissue of quotes, bullet points, mm-hmm. and tiny little emoticons and icons that are supposed to indicate to you what a person does for a living. So, yeah. For instance, let's say that somebody's a physicist. Right next to their name in the quote, you'll have a picture of Jupiter floating in the air. Well, okay, I know what a physicist does. But
they study Jupiter.
You study Jupiter. I would get very angry at this book, and in fact, the one thing restraining me from throwing it across the room and definitively breaking the binding was knowing that if I did that, then the library would be obligated to buy another copy and thus make this craven whore yet wealthier.
Yes. This book is terrible, and it's the first book we've read that is bad in an evil way.
Yes.
But before we get into that, I guess I'll go ahead and go into a bit deeper into what it is about.
Mm.
So, the premise of this book, I mean, this, I'm about to tell you 90% of the book right here, is that your body is a transmitter and a magnet and an antenna. It's a magnetized transmitting antenna. And everything you think is broadcast out to the universe.
Right.
And so if you want something in life, this is based on the book, largely material things like money, cars, things like that.
Hot people.
Yeah. All you have to do is think about it really hard. You ask, believe, and receive. So, for example, and yeah, we're just going to pull just a random idea out of the hat here. Say your life's ambition was to have sex with Sarah Polley. Well,
weird.
Yeah. First you would ask, so you would think very hard. You would ask the universe. You would say, you know, oh, sex with Sarah Polley. That's what's coming my way.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that you would imagine yourself not only eventually doing it, but like that you are doing it.
Yes, well, that's believing.
Well, yeah, so that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Ask, believe, and
receive. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't skip ahead now. This is science, Greg. We're professionals here. So you believe it. You believe, like, you know, with all your heart, yes, Sarah Polley is on her way to my house right now to show me things. And then you receive, which is basically the same thing as believing. You just, like, you prepare yourself mentally to, as the case may be, have sex with Sarah Polley.
Yeah.
I choose this example because it's definitive proof that The Secret does not work. Because this is what I've done every day of my life for the last 10 years or so, and I've got some bad news. Unfortunate for me, but lucky for you that we've saved you some time. So, but one fun thing about the universe that is very explicit is that the universe is kind of dumb, and it doesn't understand negatives.
Yeah.
So, if you think, I don't want to get stung by bees, the universe will hear, send bees my way, sting me up bad.
Well, that actually, there's some pretty awesome examples from the book.
Yeah.
I was going to do.
Yeah, read a couple of this.
I don't want to spill something on this outfit, and the universe thinks, I want to spill something on this outfit, and I want to spill more things. I don't want a bad haircut. I want bad haircuts. I don't want to be delayed. I want delays. I don't want that person to be rude to me. I want that person and more people to be rude to me. I mean, like, literally down to, I don't want to catch the flu. I want the flu, and I want to catch more things. And that, you know, that is actually one thing that The Secret goes into that is probably the craziest bridge that it crosses, which is that not only will you get material things, you know, not only maybe, say, money or other social indicators of prestige, but also things like car accidents and illnesses and even weight gain are all controlled by that crazy old antenna up in your skull.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, asking the universe for stuff is kind of like when you're a kid asking your grandma for a video game or something. You've just got to be really specific in your instructions, you know. Don't tell her the game you don't want, because that's all she's going to remember.
Right, exactly.
You know, when she gets to Kmart.
Well, the don't want thing, I mean, like, if don't want made bad stuff happen, I mean, I would be in a watery grave in the Pacific Ocean right now. The whole time we're flying New Zealand, I'm just like, oh, God, oh, God, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. And I mean, you know, here I am. So, yeah. Screw you, universe.
Yeah.
You didn't beat me that time.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, it is incredibly offensive.
Yes.
And that's one of the things about this book is that, you know, you hear, okay, well, you know, you ask the universe for stuff, and it gives it to you, and that seems fairly inoffensive. But there are all these ramifications. And Rhonda Byrne does point out that anything bad that happens to you is essentially your fault because you're sending negative vibes out to the universe.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you a little story, Greg, and this may be a little sad, a little real for the podcast.
No, but, go ahead.
So the night before I started reading this book, I watched part of a, it was a 60 Minutes segment. Found online about homeless children in America, right? So, families lost the job, and they're like living in a van with the kids.
Well, they wouldn't be living in a van, would they?
Some of them were.
Oh, okay.
Like, literally. They had one family that was like five people living in a minivan.
Okay.
And, like, the reporter, who's choking back tears through most of the thing, is, like, asking these cute little kids, like a big classroom of kids, like, hey, who here has gone to sleep hungry? Everyone raises their hand.
Yeah.
Get to hear an adorable child talk about, you know, what it feels like to be so hungry that you wake up every 15 minutes in pain. Girls talking about how, you know, this girl says that she feels racked with guilt because her parents have to buy her clothes and food and, like, stuff that parents do for kids, and it just caused her guilt. And it was so fucking depressing and horrible that I had to turn it off halfway through. It was only 15 minutes. I couldn't watch the whole thing.
You know? Yeah.
It was just awful. And then, I the next day, I read this book. Rhonda Byrne says, you know, bad things are happening to you. That's because you're sending bad... Get fucked.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know what? Jam it up your ass, Rhonda Byrne.
You vile twat.
Yeah.
I mean, just there's no redeeming qualities in this woman's message.
No.
And that really is the surprising thing, is that she is not saying, like, oh, you know, if you just act more confident, then more people will like you, and then it's more likely you'll be in a position to receive material rewards.
Yeah.
No. She is saying that, let's say, for instance, you slice your finger open. Well, you horse's ass, that's because you were thinking about slicing your finger open, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Totally your fault.
You know, you get cancer. You're thinking cancer thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That is not an exaggeration.
No.
I know that sounds crazy. It sounds like comedic effect, and it is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that is exactly what she thinks.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one guy says, like, you know, like, oh, everything that surrounds you right now in your life, including the things you're complaining about, you've attracted. Now, I know at first blush that's not something you'd want to hear. You're going to immediately say, I didn't attract that car accident. And I'm here to be a little in your face and say, yeah, you did. What?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, well, there's right around that point, there is a pretty amazing quote. That really, within this quote, is just the nut of the whole argument.
Mm.
Okay. So I'm going to read two paragraphs here. You have a choice right now. Do you want to believe that it's just the luck of the draw and bad things can happen to you at any time? Do you want to believe that you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time, that you have no control over circumstances? Or do you want to believe and know that your life experience is in your hands and that only all good can come into your life because that is the way you think? You have a choice, and whatever you choose to think will become your life experience. Now you see, right there, with an unintentional clarity, Byrne introduces, we'll call it the Matrix moment of, you know, do you choose to take the pill that will send you to the world of reality? Or do you choose to, you know, be irrational and insane and hope that you can wish your way out of anything? I mean, the reason that this book is so effective is because nobody wants to think that bad things can happen to you at any time with no reason.
Right.
No one wants to think that, you know, well, I'm a good person, but, you know, there's an infinitesimal chance that an out-of-control ice cream truck will crash through my bedroom while I'm sleeping tonight and kill me, no matter how many, you know, coins I donated to the orphanage. I mean, that's horrible. No one wants that. But to believe that... you know, only... I mean, this is the entire reason we have a legal system, right? Is to impose order on a chaotic world.
Right.
And to deny that there is chaos in the world, that bad things can happen to good people and vice versa. You know, it's a pleasant thought, I suppose, but it makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I sort of got to think... I mean, you know, we can... The argument of the book is so facile and so repugnant that after a point you stop reading it for absorbing the content or even disagreeing, and it becomes like, all right, how does this, like, what does this say about America? It becomes that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, you know, like, this book sort of strikes me as... This is the paradise lost of the American dream, Ben. the ideal reader of this is basically Satan leering at God and going, well, better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. I mean, just like this, and this actually is something that has in common with other books that we've read thus far, which is that there is this belief in unleashing the ego. You know, so, like, think about, you know, Steve Harvey's description of what a man is, you know, the Nietzschean Superman, or, you know, the most compelling and attractive character in 50 Shades of Grey, is basically Superman with a BDSM complex.
Yeah.
Superman. Fucking Superman. And that's the thing, is that we have this weird, like, Superman fetish, I guess, that we keep on bringing out, like, just this fantasy that, like, oh, well, you know, like, all those barriers that stand in your way day-to-day life, they are but transient bonds that you could snap like the Gordian knot with your mind.
Yeah. And this is why I think it could be argued that this book is evil.
Yes.
Is, you know, the best thing that can be said about this book is that it is deeply misguided and ignorant.
Yeah.
Or that its author is. The worst thing that can be said is that it is calculating and designed to part those people who can least afford it with their money.
Yeah.
It is designed... It's the worst kind of scam. Yeah, I have no problem with it. A scam that swindles wealthy people, they can swing it. But, you know, a scam that targets people who, you know, are maybe paying their last $10 for this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that is... And it's easy to see... There were several times while reading the book, I thought, well, yeah, I can see why this is popular. Because if this were true, it would be awesome. You know, I mean, really, yeah, if I could just put a picture of a 59 Cadillac convertible on the wall and just think about it a whole lot, and suddenly, you know, there in the driveway is a Cadillac a week later with big old ribbon to Ben from the universe. Keep on trucking, buddy. Yeah. We're thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, that's great. That would be really sweet.
Sure.
And that's why this is so horrible. It preys on people's desire for the easy solution.
Yeah. And that was sort of just that kind of manipulative thing. I mean, you can tell that this is, as much as this is pitched to you as though you are another seeker after wisdom, it is built on an edifice of lies and distortions, the likes of which I have never seen in even a popular book.
Yeah.
I mean, ordinarily what a popular book will do is just take a famous quote and take it out of context. Never have I seen a popular book or any book just make up quotes. Just fucking out a whole cloth. Just, here we go. There is a quote in particular in there from Emerson. And the Emerson quote talks about how, you know, like, basically, if you learn the secret, then you will be shifting gears in your life and coming to a new plane of performance. Now, Emerson died before shifting gears became a metaphor in any language, much less the American language.
Yeah.
Now, that is just a craven, whorish thing to do. And that's not because she's a woman. It's because she has no morals and because she traffics in sentiment in exchange for money. I was so repulsed by that. And, you know, here's the thing, Ben. The sickening thing about this book is that, you know, like all the people that she talks about, like all the seekers after wisdom, like all the Buddhist philosophy and American philosophy and all this stuff, like I've read a lot of that. In college, like I read a whole bunch of it just on my own. I'd read weird-ass, obscure Buddhist philosophy on my own time. And it reads like the devil found it and started fashioning it into his workshop. It's like, for me, for instance, most touching moment of the Star Wars trilogy, you know, Luke and Yoda are sitting there by the swamp, and Yoda pokes at him because, you know, Luke's being kind of a sissy. He's being all Luke and like, oh, I can't do it, Yoda. And Yoda pokes at him. He's like, you know, oh, luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. Yeah. And when I was a kid, that always used to choke me up. It was always like, man, like, you know, we're not, this is not us. Like, we're better than this. Like, we can do better than this. This book is not about you can do better. It's you deserve to own better.
Yes.
And that's the key difference.
Yeah. When we were reading it, while I was reading it, I at first began taking notes on logical, internal inconsistencies with The Secret. And about halfway through, I realized that having a discussion of how The Secret makes no sense, it's sort of like arguing with a child about Santa Claus.
Yeah.
How's it go to every house in one night, kid? You know, it just doesn't add up. Think about it. You know, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's insane bullshit. I mean, we'll probably have to get into that to a certain extent. But, and yet, some of the claims, too, are, it's not just detrimental because it's catering to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
It is also detrimental because if you followed the advice in this book, it might kill you.
Yeah.
When it starts talking about disease, I mean, it literally says, you know, disease comes from our thoughts. Like,
right.
All disease comes from our thoughts. It's basically the same argument as, like, you know, the old biologists who thought that, you know, well, where do worms come from? Well, they're spontaneously generated by the soil, you know.
Yeah.
by which I mean it's bullshit pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Only a few steps removed from the four humors. And not only does it say that, you know, with just pure thought you can summon disease, but you can also eradicate it. That has all these stories, which are all very vague about, you know, sort of the stump speech, you know, I was talking to a gentleman just the other day, you know, about, you know, this guy who willed away his cancer. And, you know, whenever I'm reading stuff like that, I'm just imagining, you know, the poor person who's like, well, I can't afford chemotherapy, but I can afford this book. And I just feel my soul with it, you know. I realize as we're discussing this that this is probably not the funniest podcast. It's probably just really, really irate and depressing. It's more of a call to arms than a chuckle fest. You know?
Sadness, the podcast. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, it builds from everyday experiences that most people dismiss as serendipity or meaningless coincidence, and turns it into a theory of you being God on Earth.
Yes.
So, literally, for instance, one of the things that she adduces as evidence that you may already be a winner in the universe sweepstakes is, you know, you ever go to, like, a store or something, like a strip mall,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the person next to you goes, like, well, gee, I don't know how we're going to get a parking space. And you get a parking space?
Yeah.
Looks like you know the secret, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
You're on it. You know it. Just that kind of thing, like, oh, well, you know, you had the secret, or your day went well, or that kind of thing. It's like, oh, well, it's only a few steps from that to, you are God in a physical body.
Yeah.
You are spirit in the flesh. You are eternal life and expressing itself as you. You are a cosmic being. You are all power. You are all wisdom. You are all intelligence. You are perfection. You are magnificence. You are the creator, and you are creating the creation of you on this planet.
You are dancing, dancing. You say that you will never die. It's a Blood Meridian cut to you, you Cormac McCarthy fan.
Yeah, that...
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, all the, like, the parking spot stuff. It's like, oh, man, I didn't realize that the true nature of the secret was confirmation bias.
Yeah, exactly.
which, for those who are not familiar, confirmation bias, of course, is the principle that people choose to ignore any evidence that does not back up their own predetermined conclusions.
Yeah, we start with a conclusion that fits your premises, and mm-hmm. anything that doesn't fit it is just like, oh, well, that's just flack. It's flotsam yeah. and jetsam. Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of like when you know, if you get a new car, you know, somebody who gets a new car, and suddenly it's like, oh, man, everybody on the road has one of these. It's like, well, now you're looking for it. Now
right, exactly.
You've decided it's a good car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anybody who had, like, somebody had taken a high school logic class could probably trounce every single paragraph in this thing.
Well, yeah, that, and, well, I mean, maybe we should go for some examples of, like, the secret in action.
Oh, yeah.
So, the secret at large. Mm-hmm. So, here's one example. Remember gratitude rocks, Ben?
Oh, God. Yeah, that scam they pulled? Yeah, tell me about the gratitude
rocks. So, gratitude rocks started when this guy, or a guy or woman, or the problem with this book is that it's not actually really a coherent book.
No.
It's kind of like a shitty script for a documentary. Like, it just has weird pull quotes from maybe 20 people.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, it should be pointed out, it was a shitty documentary before it was a book.
Yeah, true.
So that's probably why.
But anyway, this one person decided to hold a rock all the time and, like, rub the rock and just think about things that they were grateful for. And so this poor guy in South Africa, whose son has a terrible disease that's eating away at his body, hears about it. He's like, man, I wish I had some gratitude. I'm sorry. I wish I had some gratitude rocks. And so literally, the person admits in this awful shit fest,
mm-hmm.
he says, yeah, you know, so what did I do? Walked out in the driveway, got some rocks, put them in a box. 6 months later, the guy from South Africa writes back and is like, oh, man, you know, you changed my life. How did he change his life? Well, it wasn't because the guy just carried around rocks and thought about all the stuff that was going well. It was because he found a bunch of other dupes and sold them gratitude rocks.
Yeah.
Basically, this book is about being a con man.
Yeah.
This book is about giving other people your brimming excess of confidence and convincing them to buy your bullshit.
Yeah. If you sell 10 rocks to 10 friends, and they each sell their 10 rocks to 10 friends. Yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, it is con artistry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that we accuse Steve Harvey of con artistry. I think that anybody who writes a self-help book is a con artist to a certain extent. But this is taking it to a higher plane.
Yeah. Well, the thing, you know, with every self-help book, I mean, it's you know, it's the line from that Bill Callahan song about, like, you know, I could tell you about the river, or we could just get in. You know, I mean, come on now. But the other example that I was going to bring in of the secret in the world,
mm-hmm.
out and about, doing its thing, So this woman walks into this famous businessman's house, and the businessman has a picture of a naked woman, and she's kind of coquettishly concealing herself in the traditional pose of the nude, the modesty pose, and she's looking away. And the woman goes like, oh, you're romantically unsuccessful, aren't you? Well, how did you know? Which, I mean, pretty much everyone thinks that they are romantically unsuccessful, just constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she's like, oh, well, you know, you have this picture on the wall of a woman avoiding you. And he's like, well, yeah, but, you know, I like it. It's pretty. She's like, well, what's your goal? And he's like, well, I want to date 3 women in a week. And so what's the solution? Commission a painting of yourself standing with 3 naked women.
Mm-hmm. We've all done it. But never for a purpose.
It's just madness. Yeah. And the idea that, like, that makes things work. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's just a revolving door of women after that. I mean, I cannot imagine what would happen if I brought a woman home to my house and there's a picture of me with, like, a horn of plenty and just surrounded by naked women, like the ghost of Christmas present, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, no, I'm getting it painted on the side of my 73 conversion van. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of this stuff owes a great debt to old Norman Vincent Peale. You know, the power of positive thinking.
Yeah.
And the thing that is maddening about this book, well, you know, a lot of people have claimed to have said, you know, well, you know, you can laugh at The Secret all you want, but it worked for me. You know, now I'm doing great. It's like, well, that's because there is some truth to, you know, the power of positive thinking.
Right.
It is largely because if you have a positive outlook, if you are a nice person,
yeah,
and grateful to people, people will treat you well, and eventually, you know, over time, things will go pretty well for you. You know,
right.
We can all think of a very positive person we know, a very negative person we know. Yeah, you know, who do you talk to more?
Right.
And that's fine. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of value to that. But when you claim that it has nothing to do with your attitude affecting other people, but with cosmic rays from the outside.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about? It makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, that's actually sort of the reason why I think that, you know, when an Edward Gibbon of thousands of years hence goes to write The Decline and Fall of the American Empire, this will be one of the books that he uses as evidence of the American soul splintering and fragmenting. You know, just the sheer fact that the most compelling symbol that she can think of the soul, you know, all the human potential, all that distinguishes us from beast, from rock, from tree, from babbling brook, is that we're just like a TV channel.
Yeah.
I mean, is there no better way to sum up everything that makes the terrorists hate us?
Yeah.
Like, the one thing that Americans fantasize about is that they just wish they could be a TV channel. And I was thinking about it, and, you know, like, this actually is the way that a lot of people are using, like, social media. Like, you know, you think about, like, the whole feed phenomenon. And, like, I mean, what are most, like, Tumblr accounts or blogs or, dare I say it, podcasts? But, you know, sort of like, you know, it's like this fantasy that, like, you are the TV channel, you
yeah.
know? You are the provider.
Yeah.
And we're all just sort of babbling past each other in our weird, idiosyncratic, solipsistic fantasies. Well, the thing also I was going to say is that the maddening thing about this book is that it takes really, really hard-won wisdom. You know, really, really excellent thoughts and observations by people from, you know, Buddha to Abraham Lincoln, who's never quoted,
no.
Despite being mentioned constantly. And it just empties it out. So, like, my favorite example of this is, you know, quotes from, I guess, Matthew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the book of Matthew, you know, whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. And here, she says that what believing means in that sentence is, you know, believing that you'll get it. In the Bible, it means believing in God and
yeah.
the promise of eternal life.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about this book, is that it takes all of these really, really intricate, or at least powerful philosophies and religions and things like that, scrapes them out, makes them barren of any significance, and fills the gap with your ego. And everything is just about material acquisitions, finding stuff that will make you feel better about yourself. And the more you feel better about yourself, the more stuff you get.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you knew this, Greg, but according to Rhonda Byrne, Jesus was a millionaire.
Sure was.
Didn't know that. Yeah.
Moses, Abraham, Joseph.
Yeah, not just like, you know, equivalent with inflation, but like literal millionaires, yeah. According to her. That's, wearing their top hats, stomping around the desert.
Well, that's why Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, you know? I mean, they're bad news. They're onto his act.
Yeah, horning in on his racket. Yeah, well, I thought the point I was going to make earlier, talking about, you know, reasons why the terrorists hate us.
Yeah.
There is such a incredibly narrow and myopic view. One of my favorite parts of the book was, well, yeah, I kept wondering the whole time, like, all right, well, here's one of the contradictions of The Secret. What if, so whatever I wish for, and the book literally says, whatever you wish for, it will come to you. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm like, all right, what if I get 1,000 people, or, you know, let's say more than that, like, you know, 100,000 people,
right,
to all sit down and wish for their own California condor. Well, there aren't enough. Are they going to be spontaneously generated? You know, there's not enough condors.
Yep.
And she actually addresses this.
Yeah.
On, I believe, page 147. Give me just a moment.
Yeah, this was sort of thrilling because, you know, she tries to forestall all the criticisms that might come.
Yes. We see, and this is from Dr. Joe Vital, one of her friends, a crackpot that she talked to. One of the questions I get asked all the time is, if everyone uses The Secret and they all treat the universe like a catalog, aren't we going to run out of stuff? Won't everyone just make a run for it and bust the bank? Well, another crackpot, Michael Bernard Beckwith, says, the truth is that there's more than enough good to go around. There's more than enough creative ideas. There's more than enough power. There's more than enough love. There's more than enough joy. All of this begins to come through a mind that is aware of its own infinite nature. Blah, blah, blah. which makes no sense.
Well, no.
And, you know, you hear this a lot. Like, I remember the idea of, you know, well, China's really expanding. You know, wouldn't it be great if everyone in China were able to live at the same standards that we enjoy in America?
Yeah.
And, you know, you think, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. But then, you know, those scientists, those killjoys, they step in and say, like, well, there's not enough metal on Earth.
Yeah, there's metal, yeah.
Yeah, there's not enough anything. Yeah, it's impossible.
Right.
We just don't have limitless resources. And Rhonda Byrne, I mean, literally says over and over again in the book, like, oh, yeah, whatever you think of, it'll just appear. It's just your magic. Make magic things happen. That's all it is. Be happy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that, you know, she brings up very early on the genie in the lamp story from the Arabian Nights. And, you know, basically, not only does the genie give anything, I mean, there's no limit. There's no three wishes. That's too much of a killjoy. No, and not only that, you rub your own head. You just sit around massaging your own dreams. just sort of bringing yourself around.
Well, of course, you know, I think it's also important to note that she does reference the genie quite a bit. If I'm not mistaken, the word genie actually sort of came from the word djinn.
Yeah.
D-J-I-N-N, which, if I'm not mistaken, was basically a capricious demon that would fuck you over through trickery.
Yeah, well, that was the thing is that, you know, the thing that you had to worry about with the genie was not that you would run out of wishes, but that the genie would grant your wish in a way that was hellish and awful.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's the thing that she never acknowledges. There's no law of unintended consequences in this woman's world. Mm-hmm. And also, there's a fear. I think that there is a very human fear, and a fear that is unique, perhaps, to maybe the past 200 years. A fear of chance. And, you know, I remember there's a pretty good book about pragmatism, about the birth of pragmatism, the only truly American school of philosophy, called The Metaphysical Club. And, you know, it's all about William James and Charles Peirce and people like that. And, one of the ways that pragmatism, you know, the idea of sort of like ideas being generated on the ground as you work through problems, came about was thinking about statistics and thinking about probability. And like, well, why is probability so significant? Because probability is a science that in some ways attempts to replace like old-timey explanations of the way the world works. So the old explanation for like, well, why'd that hammer drop on my baby's head and kill it? Sorry, that was really grim. But, you know, why'd I drop this hammer on my foot and hurt my foot real bad? It was God's plan.
Yeah.
God wanted your foot hurt. Mm-hmm. And instead, probability says, like, well, you know, there's a given number of hammers in the universe. I mean, at a certain point, a hammer will drop on your foot. It's just, it's a matter of chance.
Yeah.
And the thing that freaks people out is the idea that everything is random. And like, oh, there's no order in the universe anymore. It's all just random chance. Mm-hmm. And the thing that Louis Menand and Charles Peirce and a lot of other people point out is that chance is not anarchy. The hardest thing to wrap your mind around is that chance is the order. That the histogram that's the distribution of like, well, there's a few extraordinary events that are terrible. There's a few extraordinary events that are great. Most everything falls in the median of like, well, it was okay. I mean, nothing really bad happened. I mean, my burger wasn't great, but it was all right.
Yeah. The bell curve thing, you know, why is it... Yeah. That guy won the lottery 3 times. You know, why is that? Well, somebody had to win the lottery 3 times. You know? Looks like it was that son of a bitch.
Exactly. That's just the way the universe works. I mean, it's nothing to be afraid of. And I think that's the fear that she really is manipulating.
Yeah. Well, she has a pretty interesting section. This is probably me analyzing the book a bit too much, but early on she has all this weird quantum mechanics stuff she pulls in.
Yeah.
She talks about how much she understands quantum mechanics, and which I find exceptionally doubtful. But there's one part where she talks about how, according to quantum mechanics, all time is happening simultaneously. Yeah. So everything that you're about to do has already happened, which means that would confirm predestination, which means that really doesn't matter what you do because it's already been decided. So you have no free will or choice. But, you know, maybe I'm looking a bit too closely at the secret.
Well, it's sort of this maddening thing, you know, like the climax of The Shining where Shelley Long is running through the hotel and, like, looking in all these rooms and seeing all these horrible things happening. And it suggests that the universe is made up of 1,000 worlds in which you are alternately maimed and crippled and poor, and also the most fabulously successful and fulfilled person ever. Mm-hmm. And that it's only a room away. Oh, if only you'd move a street over, it would all change. It just that kind of awful adaptation of science. I remember in particular there was an article that came out, not maybe, I don't know, May or April. They were talking about how some scientists said that, you know, it's possible that if the meteor hadn't struck Earth, then, you know, like, dinosaurs would have continued to evolve. I mean, they were the apex predator. Mm-hmm. And it would have produced some sort of, you know, possibly considerably more intelligent, if not human intelligent, dinosaur.
I believe this was the premise of Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Really?
Yeah, well, it's one of the finest works of...
Wasn't Dennis Hopper in that?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
It's speculative fiction, man. It's great stuff. Really, only Hopper could capture the... Just that certain je ne sais quoi of King Koopa.
But that's the thing, is that when scientists said that, I mean, it's more or less a thought experiment. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, well, you know, if given enough time to be alone, will life stagnate at a certain level of intelligence? Or is there really an evolutionary advantage to intelligence that would allow you to leapfrog over kind of stuff? And journalists took this, and it was funny, they like tracked the article titles, you know, weeks out from the original paper. And within 6 weeks of the original paper being published, it had turned into, scientists say intelligent dinosaurs rule other planets. just like there's these weird space dinosaurs out there trying to horn in on our life, you know, all just from a thought experiment.
It's in the Bible, people.
And that was the thing that kept coming up to me with all of her allusions to quantum mechanics or to psychology and, you know, Jungian archetypes and all this stuff, is that, you know, yeah, quantum mechanics is the, for some people, the last refuge of the free will ghost, you know, the ghost in the machine. That, like, well, quantum mechanics says that you can never really predict at a quantum level what a molecule is going to do. You can either say how fast it's going or where it is. You can't do both, and you don't know what's going to happen next. It might spontaneously disappear. And so a lot of people have turned this into kind of spiritualist mumbo-jumbo about, like, the soul is the electron, and, you know, yeah. Like, if I think about... And this is a really sad example, but I've seen it in a book. That's why I bring it up. Mm-hmm. I'm just full of them tonight. I'm sorry. In the sad example, Greg.
A dead baby.
This guy, he wrote a book about how his wife had died. And that basically he was trying to resurrect her via imagining her, like conjuring her presence. And, you know, it reminded me in some ways of like 17th century science, you know, the sort of edges of experimental science then, which was alchemy, you know, leaking over into like people like John Dee, who was Elizabeth the First astrologer, you know, saying that he can conjure demons and get demons to do what he wants. Just that kind of fantasy that, like, well, if I just think hard enough about it, if I just think hard enough. And I think that that's really, you know, more than quantum mechanics, more than anything else, this basically is a book about, I don't really like doing stuff. I would much rather just kind of wish.
Yeah. Let me offer a counterpoint, Greg. Quote, here is the wow factor. When you think about what you want, and you emit that frequency, you cause the energy of what you want to vibrate at that frequency, and you bring it to you. As you focus on what you want, you are changing the vibration of the atoms of that thing, and you are causing it to vibrate to you. Didn't I just say that? The reason you are the most powerful transmission tower in the universe is because you've been given the power to focus your energy through your thoughts and alter the vibrations of what you are focused on. So that magnetic... Hey, you know, whenever... Energy is one of those words. Whenever I hear someone say energy, it's sort of like hearing someone talk about toxins.
Hmm.
It's like, you know, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, yeah. And you're dealing with someone who has a very little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's all this... This book is so filled with pseudoscience bullshit. And misinterpreted science. And just outright fabrications and fantasies. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, it reminded me a lot of... I can't remember who said it. It might have been Ezra Pound. That bad writing is first and foremost caused by a lack of curiosity. And this book, and a lot of the books we've read for that matter, I mean, think of, you know, well, I'm writing a book about Seattle. What's the weather like in Seattle, I wonder? You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just sort of being satisfied with a superficial level of knowledge and never asking yourself, like, well, this is a nice thing to think. This is a convenient enough scenario. I kind of like it being on paper. But maybe there's something that would disagree with me. I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
Just never bothering to do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of coating yourself in a comfortable robe of lard that will protect you from anything that might hurt you or disagree with you. You know, when you're down, don't think about why you're down. Don't think about what you could do to fix the situation. Think of something or someone beautiful. Maybe think of a baby.
Yeah.
That's her advice, literally. Think about a baby. Yeah. That will make everything better.
Yeah.
Avoid fat thoughts.
Yeah. Avoid fat people.
Avoid fat people.
Yeah, if you, in order to lose weight. Well, number one, I mean, first of all, we got to get right down to it. I learned reading this book that food doesn't make you fat.
Nope.
You can eat, you can bury your head in a robe of lard, and you can just eat that bad boy as long as you're thinking skinny thoughts and also ignoring fat people. you will lose weight. Because, I mean, really, isn't that a... As long as, yeah, the, as much as the book talks about gratitude, isn't that a nice thing to do, you know? Excuse me, sir, could you... Where's the bathroom? Oh, get out of my way, fat stuff. Don't got time for you. You gotta think thin thoughts.
Oh, well, yeah, prick. This kind of feeling that, like, stuff you don't want is like the plague.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, like you should walk around with this weird cone over your face, constructed only of your fatuous self-illusion. You know, like, oh, keep away, fatty. You're bad news, man.
Well, she also says that, you know, you're not supposed to think about disease.
No.
And you're not supposed to listen if other people are talking about disease. So if you're talking to a sick person and you can't change the subject and they just won't shut up about how they're dying, you just get up and walk away.
Yeah.
Sorry, Grandpa. I don't have time for you.
Well, some of the, you know, the mantras and stuff like that, like this book, as with most self-help books, is filled with slogans and mantras and catchy little phrases, because the book doesn't take your intelligence seriously enough to disperse its observations. So for instance, say to yourself, I love money and money loves me, which is just about the saddest thing I can imagine.
It's also my favorite Randy Newman song.
Just like, I mean, the thing about this book is, you know, like you said, like, immediately you start imagining the guy who can't afford chemo,
yeah,
and who scrapes together enough to buy this book.
Yeah.
Or the person sitting in, you know, a shotgun shack with a 40-watt bulb, reading the Bible, puts it down, picks this up, and is like, I love money, and money loves me. It's just,
oh, yeah.
And that's probably why all the examples I'm giving you are just like, awful and gruesome, because this book lives so much in a dandelion world that it's hard to be anything but the nuclear blast that follows.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there are so many examples of that. There was one about the write down a list of everything you're grateful for.
Yeah.
I just had this image of, you know, just some sad sack, you know, eating a Hot Pocket over the kitchen sink and just staring at a blank piece of paper. Just, gotta be something, you know. I don't know, maybe the problem is with me. Maybe I need to think more positively, but I don't think these possibilities are outside the realm of reason.
No, and you know, the thing is that unlike, I mean, like the Steve Harvey book, everything we said about the Steve Harvey book is true.
Yes.
But it is conceivable that if you kind of interpreted his stuff with a grain of salt, that you might find, you know, a good gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
To wed and to bed down with and to make your children with.
Yeah.
I don't know why I put that so weirdly. But that
court.
Yeah.
Inevitable coitus.
But this book will lead you not down the primrose path, not down even a possible primrose path, but down financial ruin and horrible coronary arrest. Yeah. I mean, the thing in particular about, like, I used to be afraid of opening my bills. And then... Don't try this one at home, folks.
Yeah.
The trick is with bills is that, you see, you're looking at them all wrong.
Yeah.
You open them up, you take them out, and whatever the total is, you add a zero.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that the bill is $300.
Mm-hmm.
You add a zero, now you got $3,000. Yeah. But it's not a bill anymore, stupid.
No.
You know what that is? That's a check for $3,000 written to you by the universe.
Happy birthday in the memo line.
Hey, yeah. What? Who would tell someone that?
Yeah. And again, talk about sad images.
Yeah.
An elderly woman in a frayed house. I'm in the money now. Oh, God.
And they're like, you know, oh, well, don't pay any bills until you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Well, looks like I'm going to debtor's prison. Yeah. And, I mean, one of the guys, it's not Rhonda Byrne, but one of the various and sundry crackpots that weighs in as the book progresses, says, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, my secret with bills was I just started thinking about getting checks in the mail. You know what? I just started getting checks in the mail. Oh, really? Did you do anything else?
Yeah.
Where were they from?
Yeah.
You know, it's madness.
Yeah.
It's absolute madness. I don't understand how, I mean, I imagine that after everyone in this book says something, they just snicker into their sleeve, you know.
Well, this is the horrible thing, and this may be sort of the crux of the matter, is that, you know, Rhonda Byrne and all these people, I mean, they talk about it at length. They're all wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all happy. They're all at their ideal weight. Quote, unquote, one man says, I want to kiss myself sometimes. And, you know, Oprah is of course, famously wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
To an absurd and extravagant extent. But one thing about rich people is that rarely do rich people actually know how they got rich. A lot of wealthy people, and I mean not just wealthy people, that's probably being unfair. People who are successful in any endeavor will emphasize in their own story, well, you know what I did, and you know what I did, and then I did this thing, and then I did this thing, and then I did that thing. And the thing that most people don't want to think about is, well, like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to get my painting shown in that gallery if my brother-in-law didn't know somebody who worked there and, you know, all sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that is because, well, you know, look, you wouldn't have become a famous artist if your paintings weren't worth a damn.
Yeah.
So in a way, you know, connections can get your foot in the door, but you have to keep it open.
Yeah.
The trick is that people who have been successful begin to ascribe all of their success to themselves. And this book is written by successful people in a closed chamber for other successful people, but the intended audience is desperately poor and unhappy people. And that's what makes it so gruesome and sickening and kind of like, you know, imagining a latter-day Roman banquet in which crippled people are brought in and laughed at. Sorry, again, I don't know what's wrong with me.
So, Greg, would you recommend this book?
Like I said, I mean, if I could, I would destroy this book.
Yeah.
I would never recommend this book to anyone for any reason whatsoever.
Nor would I. It's awful. It's, yeah, I would say it's the worst thing we've read thus far.
Yeah.
I would be impressed if we topped it, though I believe Rhonda Byrne has another book called The Power. So, maybe we can. What book would you recommend instead, Greg?
Ooh. Well, you know, I thought about that a great deal. I'm kind of having trouble conjuring that in an immediate sense. You know, it's hard to say because it's hard to figure out exactly what, you know, you should say. Like, what person would want this book? That kind of thing. Because everything that I would recommend would be kind of obscure and challenging and weird. So it's sort of hard to be like, hey, yeah, you don't have a house? Well, read the collected works of Nagarjuna, the Mahayana Buddhist philosopher. You know, I mean, that's kind of a hard sell. So what would you recommend, Ben?
Well, I thought about this long and hard. Well, you know, the thing with this book that's so frustrating is that it says that great things will come to you without you having to do anything. You will barely even have to take action. You just will things into existence. Well, I think we all know that's not true. You have to take action. You have to maybe do some distasteful stuff. You can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. And that's why I'd recommend The Anarchist Cookbook by William Powell. If you want to read a book that will show you how to get shit done, well, you can make some Molotov cocktails and learn, you know, the finer points of growing weed in your basement. It's a fantastic volume. It'll let you stick it to the man.
Well, yeah, maybe, I mean, like, if you're an egomaniac, you find your ego to be the deciding force in the world. Yeah, maybe Anton LaVey. Maybe cool. You know, Anton Chandor LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan in America. He claimed to have been a carny, and he claimed to have worked in, I guess, the San Francisco or San Diego Police Department and all this other stuff. But he wrote all these books that, you know, LaVey's books, they're not really about Satan, per se.
No.
They're more about, like, freeing the ego to, you know, do what the ego wants and stuff. I'm probably putting it too strong to say that you have to be, like, an egotistical bastard to enjoy them. That's not entirely true. But there is a kind of... it is a set of books that worship selfishness as a means to an end, because sometimes you cannot sacrifice yourself for someone who does not want to save themselves. Yes.
And also, hedonism is fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Hey, that's why I got that painting in the living room with me with three naked women. So.
Like to eat brandy-soaked grapes and just stare at that thing. Well, I guess it's that time, Greg. What's the next book we're reading?
Well, you know, I thought long and hard about this, and we try to be relevant. Although books are not relevant to most Americans, so that's sort of a challenge.
We try to be the most relevant buggy whip salesman you'll ever encounter.
But I was thinking, you know, this movie has not too long ago, I mean, matter of months, left theaters. Ooh. And was in Oscar contention. So I choose Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Oh.
Yep, yep.
Well, I guess I've got to read that bastard again.
Here we come, magic realism.
Yeah. Well, an excellent choice, and that that episode will be coming soon.
Yeah.
Just a couple of announcements before we go. Well, yeah. Not announcements, just... hey, send us an email.
Yeah.
Be like Scott and Meg.
Yeah.
They're two people who have sent us emails.
Jeff Huber.
Yeah, Jeff Huber.
Yeah, we've started to hear from the people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, as much fun as we have making fun of stuff in front of a computer, what we really enjoy and what makes it a lot of fun is hearing from the audience and hearing you guys enjoy it. And that's really cool.
Yes.
So please feel free to email us. We respond promptly.
Yes.
And we love you. We love you already. We've been drawing you to us with our magic TV in our heads. Yeah. So yeah, and also actually as an aside, Jeff, I don't know if I told you this, Ben, but Jeff has suggested a drinking game for all the good people in America, which is when you're listening to Cannon Fodder, just take a swig every time you hear the word tedious. So,
well, having listened to these episodes through editing, I would advise not to take a shot whenever I describe something as weird, because you'll be dead in 15 minutes. Trying to overcome some my conversational tics.
But yeah, contact us. Let us know how you're doing and what you think about the podcast. And if you have any suggestions, comments, concerns, we are available at Cannon Fodder Pod. That's Canon.
Yeah.
Fodder Pod.
It's a pun.
It's a pun.
And yeah, at gmail.com. Send us emails there. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben R. Williams.
Yeah.
Go to my website, benrwilliams.com. Probably there now. Read my serial novel. Anyway. and of course, as always, thanks to Ryan Browning for the use of his song Destroyer, which bookends the podcast. And if you want to download that song, more of Ryan Browning stuff, or just great local music from local to Roanoke, Virginia, go to sewntogetherrecords.com. They met their Kickstarter goal.
Woo!
Got a physical release coming out soon. Get it. It's going to be good. All right. And until next time, we will see you next time.
Bid you good evening.